Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalized formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROSE.com/morbidology. That is PROSE.com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula, PROSE.com/morbidology.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sherry Schreiner was an ordinary woman who convinced thousands to join her doomsday alien internet cult, which ultimately resulted in murder, suicide, and mind control.
How does a poor woman with practically nothing inspire mankind to stand up against the strongholds of Satan?
So how did this Midwest mom turn into a maniacal cult leader? Find out on The Opportunist, a new podcast from Cass Media. Listen and subscribe to The Opportunist on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen.
For those of you who have an online presence, whether it be a blog, a shop, a podcast, or anything in between, do you ever struggle to come up with content snippets? I know I personally struggle with writer's block when it comes to writing intros and previews for my freelance writing, and even for my podcast. Well, today's sponsor, Content Bot, is a complete game changer. Content Bot helps to create unique and original content snippets in just a few seconds with some basic input. I know what you're probably thinking. There's no way that artificial intelligence could possibly write something as good as a human. But if you check it out, you will honestly be so pleasantly surprised. Content Bot can create product descriptions, generate blog topic ideas, generate page headline ideas, generate a list of marketing ideas, and can even create a blog intro for your next article. Just head on over to contentbot.ai or click the link in my show notes and you can see for yourself how amazing it actually is. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. Aspen is a ski resort town located 13,000 feet up the Rocky Mountains. At one point in time, it was a silver mining town, but now it is a magnet for the wealthy. Nestled among a picturesque mountain and lakes, the average home price in Aspen is around $5 million, with at least 50 billionaires owning a home here. In the 1970s and 1980s, Aspen had a reputation for cocaine-fueled excess. But since then, its reputation has drastically changed, and it has an extremely low crime rate. However, in 2014, a wealthy Aspen socialite was found dead in her expensive home, sparking an exhaustive investigation, the outcome of which would come as a complete shock to the entire area. It was the 27th of February 2014 when the Colorado Bureau of Investigations and the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office announced that they were investigating the possible homicide of a local woman who lived in the West Buttermilk Road area. They were very tight-lipped about the incident, other than stating that they were made aware of a deceased body on the evening beforehand. Sheriff Joe DeSalvo stated, "The death is considered to be suspicious and currently part of an active and ongoing investigation. The successful arrest and prosecution of a person or persons responsible will be the highest priority for this office." While the victim and the cause of death was not immediately released, Aspen is a very quaint and small area. It was noticed almost immediately that there was a flurry of police activity at the home of 57-year-old Nancy Feister, who lived in the West Buttermilk Road area. Nancy was very well known in the community. A bureau truck, which was equipped to handle forensic evidence, was spotted pulling in to the private driveway of Nancy's home at 1:15 p.m. The same day, white-yellow crime scene tape surrounded her home, while a police officer stood guard. That same day, three patrol vehicles were spotted leaving the Aspen Old Lodge, which was a hotel in Basalt, and a couple of minutes later, a tow truck was called to the hotel and was seen hauling away a car from the parking lot. According to guests in the hotel, two individuals were arrested at the hotel. While investigators were remaining silent in regards to the scene at Nancy's home, as well as at the hotel, rumours began to circulate that the two events were somehow linked. After all, as I said, Aspen is a very quaint community where crime is extremely rare. There hadn't been a murder case in Pitkin County since October of 2001, and in that incident, Andrew Kachik shot and killed Vincent Thomas, who had been dating his ex-girlfriend. On the 1st of March, investigators confirmed that the deceased was Nancy Feister, and that they were investigating her death as a homicide. However, they wouldn't elaborate any further than to say that they had several leads, but no suspects. Police had been alerted to Nancy's home shortly before 6 p.m. on the 26th of February. Her friend had called 911 after finding Nancy's lifeless body inside an upstairs closet in her home.
Oh my God!
911, what is the address of the emergency?
Help me! Oh my God!
What is the address of the emergency? Is that a house business or apartment?
It's a house. It's Nancy's sister's house. My friend.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
Oh, okay. My friend had... I found my friend in the closet.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
I couldn't find her. She didn't call, and these people said the dog had been in the house and she hasn't been around. So I went up there to get the dog and was looking for her.
I need you to tell me exactly what happened.
I can't. My friend is in her closet, dead.
In her closet?
Yes.
Okay, stay on the line with me. We're going to send help that way.
Nancy was born on the 4th of July, 1956, in Orofino, Idaho, to Art and Betty. Her parents were prominent members of the Aspen community for a number of decades. The couple had met in the lift line at Aspen Mountain and were married in 1954. 2 years later, Nancy came along. Betty was a force to be reckoned with. She earned the Congressional Gold Medal in 2010 for her role in the Women Air Force Service Pilots, which were the first women to fly military aircraft for the United States. For a while, Betty was a Pan Am stewardess, and she learned to fly helicopters, making her instrumental in developing a heliport at Aspen Valley Hospital. Art had attended flight school after World War II began. He was a flight instructor and flew planes from India to China while delivering gasoline. For a while, he worked on the Aspen Skiing Co. board of directors and helped to develop Buttermilk Mountain Ski Resort in the 1960s. Art would sell his share of the mountain to Aspen Skiing Co., and his ranch would later be developed into the Maroon Creek Club. The family were known as Aspen's Blue Bloods. As news of Nancy's murder swept through the area, those who knew her said that they were in disbelief and shock. Her friend, Elsa Mitchell, spoke with the Aspen Times and said, "I always thought of Nancy as a flower child, a free soul full of kindness and happiness, and a Peter Pan who would never grow up in the sense of the words as an adult, is meant or destined to. She will be sorely missed." Nancy was always unapologetically herself. Her cavalier attitude was accepted by her friends, and many celebrated her eccentricities, while others sometimes struggled to cope with them. One of her friends spoke with 48 Hours.
Nancy did not have an off button. She was on all the time. And no one else is, so that in itself could wear a little thin once in a while. One night after she left Hunter's, you know, and she had exasperated everyone there. You know, I think I said, "Why do we put up with her?" And Hunter just looked at me and said, "It's too late. We've known her forever." She was stuck with her.
Nancy was essentially a socialite of Aspen and was often described as Aspen royalty. She mingled with Hollywood stars such as Cher and Jack Nicholson. She was close friends with Hunter S. Thompson. In fact, at one point in time, Nancy was engaged to Michael Douglas, who had a home in Aspen and invested heavily in its development in the early 1990s. As a local who didn't want to be identified said, "Nancy certainly used to be one of the big party girls here, sort of Aspen royalty. She knew all the Hollywood stars. And as well as being a lovely person, she was very pretty." As mentioned, Aspen is a place where crimes of violence are exceptionally rare, and the ski resort town was set upon by a media flurry. The following day, locals noticed another flurry of police activity, this time at the Christiana Lodge in Aspen. A number of officers armed with a search warrant took items from inside an Alpine Bank employee housing unit at the lodge, but once again, investigators refused to elaborate any further. A source did confirm that the unit was being rented by an Alpine Bank employee, who Nancy had mentioned on a Facebook post on the 6th of February. In the post, Nancy had written that she wanted to temporarily rent out her home on West Buttermilk Road for $4,000 per month because she was planning a trip in the spring. Aspen was abuzz with talk of the murder when it was announced that a man and woman had been arrested in connection with Nancy's murder. They were identified as 65-year-old William Francis Styler and his wife, 62-year-old Nancy Christine Styler. The couple had been renting Nancy's home during the fall, and they were the two people who had been arrested at the Aspinall Lodge. When they were brought in for questioning, they both denied any involvement in Nancy's death. They were both ordered to be held without bond and were both facing charges of first-degree murder. In addition, they were also facing charges of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. The investigation had uncovered that William and Nancy Christine had begun renting from Nancy in the fall of 2013, and Nancy had gone on vacation to Australia. Investigators believe that when Nancy returned home on the 21st of February, she was murdered by William and Nancy Christine. Her body wasn't found until a friend discovered her in an upstairs closet on the 26th of February. It was still the very early stages of the investigation, and as of yet, no motive had emerged. However, shortly before Nancy arrived home from her vacation, she had posted on her Facebook page, "I'd like to stay in Australia, but the people that were supposedly taking care of my house are not doing what they said they would do, and they're not paying the rent, and they haven't paid utilities." The following day, William and Nancy Christine appeared at the Pitkin County District Court on pending murder charges. The courtroom was packed with Nancy's loved ones as well as the investigators who worked on the case. After they entered the courtroom, William, who was in a wheelchair, addressed the courtroom stating, "I can't stand up for the judge." The married couple remained silent throughout the proceedings, during which they were both provided counsel by public defenders. During the hearing, William's defense attorney, Sarah Steele, stated that William had mental health issues that needed to be taken care of. They were both charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Of course, it goes without saying that you can't identify a killer by their appearance. However, people were surprised when they saw William and Nancy Christine in court. The couple were both in their 60s, and William, in particular, looked older than his years, and he looked extremely frail. To those who knew the couple, the arrests were a complete shock. William and Nancy Christine were well known in Denver, where they started the Victoria Conservancy, which specialised in water lilies and provided flowers for gardens throughout the world. William had also worked as an anesthesiologist in the Denver area and was the chairman of St. Joseph Hospital's Department of Anesthesiology in the 1990s. The couple had a son, and they had lived in Greenwood Village until around 8 years earlier, when William came down with a neurological illness, which forced him to quit the medical practice. It was around this time that William began to help Nancy Christine with her full gardening role at the Victoria Conservancy. She was known as a world-class expert. It was also around this time that things started to go south for the couple. State and federal court documents would show that William had once filed complaints in the Denver County District Court, the Colorado Supreme Court Attorney Regulation Council, and the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Denver. He was attempting to collect more than $800,000 from a lawyer who once represented him and overcharged him. In this case, William had hired John Powell to represent him in a lawsuit against his former company, Colorado Anesthesia Consultants, in 2005, who he accused of not compensating him for software he designed to keep track of appointments. William lost the case, but attorney Powell billed him over $610,000 for legal services. Then in 2010, William sued attorney Powell for overcharging him. The following year, attorney Powell was placed on 2 years probation for overbilling William and another client. He would subsequently file for bankruptcy, which protected him from paying William the default judgment of more than $800,000. William then filed an adversary action in a bid to collect the money. In a later filing from attorney Powell, he accused William of watching his house. He said that his wife had filed a police report and that his neighbour had confronted William as he was rummaging through his mailbox. During the ordeal, there was a common theme of William complaining about his futile attempts to collect the judgment. He had written a letter to the Supreme Court which read, "I found myself so traumatised by the experience." And then he told an attorney that the legal struggle had left him with suicidal thoughts and even fantasising about committing suicide by cop. The couple had gone from leading a robust lifestyle to struggling to make ends meet. Denver attorney Paul Gordon, who represented William in his lawsuit against attorney Powell, said, "The arrest was just the awful next step in what had been a difficult story for him for the last 10 years or so." He also said that the last time he saw William, he looked like he was in his late 80s and was extremely frail. He stated, "I'm adamant, at least that time I saw him, that he didn't have physical ability to drag a body and stuff it into a closet. He just couldn't have done that. From Nancy's Facebook posting, it appeared as though the murder could have been the culmination of a dispute between Nancy and William and Nancy Christine over rent, and this sent Aspen tongues wagging. However, Nancy's daughter, Juliana, spoke with ABC News to speak about the motivation. She said, "How could someone just be so angry that they got kicked out of a house? There's got to be something more. It's hard to understand that." The arrest only led to more questions than answers. It still hadn't been revealed how Nancy had been killed or if the murder truly had been the result of a rental dispute. If that was the case, it seemed quite ironic, considering the fact that William had been involved in a legal battle with somebody who had owed him money. Just days later, there was an unexpected twist when a third person was arrested and held without bond on charges of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. The person was identified as 56-year-old Catherine Carpenter. As news of the third arrest went throughout Aspen, it would be revealed that Catherine had been the friend who found Nancy's body and called police. Investigators informed the public that Catherine had lived in an employee housing unit at the Christiana Lodge, and after 3 days, they had executed a search warrant, as I mentioned earlier. Seemingly, whatever they found led investigators to arrest Catherine as well. Catherine had close ties to Nancy. In fact, she handled numerous affairs for Nancy's house, including renting arrangements. She had recently just had her 20th anniversary at Alpine Bank, and had been working as a teller at the branches in both the Aspen Business Centre and East Hopkins Avenue. While Nancy was on vacation, Catherine had helped take care of her 8-month-old Labradoodle, Gabe, taking him to the vets and walking him. Just the following day, William and Nancy Christine appeared in court, where their attorneys filed motions that suggested that their clients were frustrated with the publicity the case was generating. They argued that a lot of information about the case had been leaked in the media by law enforcement sources. It goes without saying that pre-trial publicity is a concern for both the prosecution and the defence, and Aspen was completely abuzz with rumours and speculation. Virtually every single person in the ski resort town was talking about the case, and William and Nancy Christine's attorneys contended that the publicity would have a detrimental effect on their ability to get a fair trial.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's easy to become overwhelmed and confused by all of the variations of teeth whitening that are out there on the market. Well, today's episode is sponsored by the amazing Smile Brilliant. They've taught me some useful information that alleviates some of that confusion, such as, did you know that LED lights are simply a novelty item? That strip lights neglect the gum lines, crevices, and molars? The charcoal is abrasive and wears down the enamel, and that whitening toothpaste only works on surface stains? Dentists always recommend that the number one product is a custom-fitted tray. However, they're super expensive and require a dentist to make them by hand, with a model of your teeth. That's where Smile Brilliant comes in. With Smile Brilliant's Lab Direct process, you can have custom fitted teeth whitening trays at a fraction of the price without ever going to the dentist. They will use an exact model of your teeth to handcraft you a personalized tray, ensuring the best possible result. All you do is make your own dental impressions at home and then return them to Smile Brilliant using the prepaid envelope they provide. It really couldn't be simpler and is a fraction of the price of the dentist. Just head on over to smilebrilliant.com or click the link in my show notes and use promo code Morbidology for 30% off. HelloFresh cuts out the stresses of meal planning and trips to the grocery store. If you're like me, you always end up buying produce that you don't use. With HelloFresh, you can enjoy cooking and eating and get dinner on the table in just 30 minutes or less. You can select from over 23 recipes each week, which feature a range of flavors and ingredients, so there's something for everybody, including vegetarian, pescatarian, and low-carb diets. You can also easily skip any week you don't want a HelloFresh box or change your delivery date. With HelloFresh, eating good could not be simpler. I've been using HelloFresh for the past 2 months, and my favourite dishes so far have got to be the roasted pepper and aubergine linguine and the turmeric roasted cauliflower. Each meal comes with a simple recipe card, which is super easy to follow. If you're like me, you always get in a rut when it comes to making different meals each night, and HelloFresh takes that away. It's easy to see why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. So head on over to HelloFresh.com/Morbidology12 and use code Morbidology12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. That is HelloFresh.com/Morbidology12 for 12 free meals. On the 17th of March, a celebration of Nancy's life was held at the Hotel Jerome Ballroom and was packed with around 400 friends and family members. Tibetan prayer flags were draped across the ceiling, while naked trees were set up in the ballroom so that people could leave a personal note of remembrance. A number of Nancy's loved ones fondly recalled that Nancy had an ever-present smile and a gregarious nature. They spoke of a woman whose deep love for life was contagious to everybody that she met. George Stranahan, a close friend of Nancy throughout her life, said, "Nancy was the senior adventurer of the world. She was a travel adventurer, a relationship adventurer, a social cause adventurer, a life adventurer. Adventure is always about surprise and discovery, and these are what fed her spirit." Billy Clayton, another lifelong friend of Nancy, described himself as the boy who knew Nancy before she discovered boys. His memories of Nancy made those in attendance erupt in laughter. Nancy's daughter, Juliana, also spoke, and emotions in the ballroom ran high. Juliana said that she hadn't prepared a speech, but recalled her mother as being a loving, caring, and ecstatic person. She said, "She was my portal into this world. She told me there was a soul knocking, and so she had me. But I feel like I chose her. I really thought we had a lot more time. I hope she is shining on us as the eternal butterfly that she is." Following Juliana's words, a slideshow was presented depicting Nancy's life as well as the many travels she had taken, as the Paul Simon song, "Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes," played in the background. Following the montage, Christina Pfister, Nancy's sister, spoke and called her sister a very beautiful person. She said that many people lived vicariously through Nancy's adventures, while her son, Tyler, performed a song which he wrote for Nancy. One of Nancy's close friends, Mary Conover, said that Nancy had a magnetic charm that very few people could escape. She said that most of her close friends were in the room and that she knew all of them because of Nancy, stating, "She loved Aspen and always returned home. Nancy burned bright and burned hard." Days later, Pitkin County District Judge Gail Nichols ordered the court files involving William and Nancy Styler be released to their attorneys. These files included search and arrest warrant information, which had been sealed by a court order. Shortly thereafter, the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office confirmed that they would no longer be releasing any information regarding the investigation, with no new information being publicly released. rumors began to circulate that there was a fourth suspect, whose arrest was imminent. However, in early April, the district attorney announced that there were no more suspects in Nancy's murder, and no more arrests were to be expected. Shortly after the announcement, Pitkin County District Judge Gail Nicholas delayed the preliminary hearing for the three suspects at the request of their attorneys. They had argued that they needed more time in order to review the large volumes of information that had only been presented to them just weeks earlier. Meanwhile, the 9th Judicial District Attorney's Office took steps to unseal the court documents in the case. District Attorney Sherry Kalua filed a motion asking the judge to unseal the case, reiterating that the case had been sealed because the investigation was ongoing. However, now there were three suspects that had been charged with first-degree murder, and there were no other suspects being arrested. She said that the investigation phase was pretty much complete, and there was no reason to keep the details of the case from the public. All three defence teams strongly opposed the case being unsealed, and the judge gave them several weeks to file a response. As the defence were preparing their arguments as to why the case should remain sealed, a cause of death for Nancy was finally publicly released. Coroner J. Stephen Ayers revealed that Nancy had been bludgeoned to death with an object that had a small, curved shape. He also said that she had been dead for around 36 hours before her body was found on the 26th of February. The coroner's office was not covered by the court order sealing the case, so he was allowed to release Nancy's cause of death. Towards the end of the month, the defence teams were in court to argue while the file should remain sealed. Defence Garth McCarty, who was on Nancy Christine's defence team, argued that the arrest warrant affidavit contained numerous misleading statements made by law enforcement, and said that unsealing the files would contaminate the jury pool and make it extremely difficult to get a fair trial. He also stated that the suspicion articulated against Nancy Christine in the affidavit, which supported her arrest, was largely dependent on statements from Catherine, who herself would be arrested and charged in the crime later. He also argued that the affidavit also took several of Nancy Christine's statements out of context and exploited the statements in misleading ways. Defence McCarty also questioned the District Attorney's Office's decision to file a notice seeking the unsealing of the files when they had originally asked them to remain sealed. The judge would ultimately decide that the files should remain sealed, meaning that virtually no information regarding the case would be publicly released until the case went to trial. In mid-May, prosecutors would file additional charges against William, Nancy Christine, and Catherine. Those charges were accessory to first-degree murder, which meant that the Stylers and or Catherine helped one another cover up the murder, help the perpetrator get away, or both. The following month, there would be an unexpected twist in the case when it was announced that all charges against Nancy Christine had been dropped. According to the Pitkin County District Attorney's Office, there was lack of evidence to prove that Nancy Christine was involved in Nancy's murder. However, they couldn't elaborate any further because of the seal. The unexpected update in the case led to rumours that the case against William and Catherine could be weak as well. District Attorney Sherry Kalua held a press conference to state that the case wasn't falling apart, but instead was getting stronger and was coming to a resolution. She said that William still remained a prime suspect in the murder, and even said, in reference to Nancy Christine, "I'm not saying she's innocent." More information would come to light just the following day, when William appeared in court and pleaded guilty to Nancy's murder. The plea was part of a plea agreement, wherein he pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. In court, he said that he acted alone in the murder and used a hammer to beat Nancy to death while she slept on the night of the 24th of February. In Colorado, prosecutors are able to reduce a charge of first-degree murder to second-degree murder in order to obtain a confession. Quite often, it can be preferred because it saves the money it would cost to go to trial. During William's confession, he said that he had intended on going over just to speak to Nancy.
God, I wish it never happened. I remember going there with the intention of talking to her. I was angry with her and intended to challenge her and to demand that she retract her demands for more money. I intended to confront her and to demand that she back down.
When he arrived at her home, he found that the front door was unlocked. He said he went upstairs and found Nancy in bed.
I remember calling her name, coming in, finding her blissfully asleep. I think there was part of me that was thinking that she was playing asleep, that she was just not responding. I've been told since that time that she had earplugs in. That's why she didn't hear me. I didn't know that at the time.
According to William, he hadn't realized that Nancy was wearing earplugs, and that was why she didn't respond to him when he called out her name. He claimed that he flew into a blind rage, believing that Nancy had been ignoring him.
She was sleeping peacefully while my wife was going down the tubes. The next thing I knew, it had been done. I struck the first blow in the back of her head because that was what was available. Since she did not react to that, took her from sleep straight to unconsciousness. Bang, 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 bang. It was bang. And what do I do now? And then probably took a couple of minutes before I thought, let's just make sure I hit her the two frontal lobes. Turn more on top. Because I knew that that would preclude the consciousness.
He then explained what he did with Nancy's body after he made sure that she was dead.
I wanted to contain her, and I grabbed some big trash bags. Used one over her head. I put the other one over her feet. I used the extension cord to kind of hold her up like this. I rolled the body onto a sheet, pulled her off of the bed under the floor, and then dragged the sheet. Basically, the sheet there,
okay.
She's there. Grabbed the foot of the sheet, so to speak. Pulled it to me. Only took about, it was only about 10 feet.
Outside of court, defense attorneys for both the Stylers and Catherine said that the evidence was extremely circumstantial and said that the cases against Nancy Christine and Catherine were virtually non-existent, when District Attorney Kahlua said that the evidence against William was strong. She stated that because of William's age and medical condition, 20 years in prison was essentially a life sentence. She informed the public that in the days leading up to Nancy's murder, she and William had been involved in a dispute over the rent and money that he and Nancy Christine owed her. She said it was her belief that the murders had been motivated by financial reasons. The plea agreement felt like a slap in the face to Nancy's loved ones, who wanted a longer sentence for William. They had implored Chief District Judge James Boyd to impose the maximum sentence, which was 32 years. But the judge opted against that and went with the prosecutor's recommendation of 20 years in a Department of Corrections prison with medical facilities. It was also revealed that all of the charges against Catherine had been dropped. Prosecutors said that if new evidence came to light, they could refile the charges against Catherine. But as part of the deal, Nancy Christine would never be charged in relation to the murder. It was a bitter pill for the family to swallow. They were not only upset by the sentence, but upset that William would be serving his sentence in a medical facility, and upset that Nancy Christine and Catherine had their charges dropped. Since the files had been sealed, they really had no clue what kind of evidence the prosecution had against the two women, and if they were really involved or not. With the case technically resolved, some more information would finally be publicly released. Following Nancy's murder, a sanitation worker would find some evidence in a city receptacle. He found a bloody hammer and several prescription bottles with Nancy's name and address on them. William's DNA was found all over the hammer and the pill boxes. Furthermore, a hotel worker at the hotel where William and Nancy Christine were arrested found the missing key to Nancy's closet where her body had been stuffed. And it had been Nancy Christine who had called Catherine to tell her that Nancy had disappeared. Nancy Christine had even suggested that Nancy may have ended her own life, stating that nobody was taking care of the dog and that there was a foul smell coming from inside the home. It would also be revealed that essentially it was a misunderstanding that had led to Catherine being arrested. After being alerted to the foul smell by Nancy Christine, Catherine went over to Nancy's house to investigate. When she found Nancy inside the closet, she was wrapped up in trash bags as well as bed sheets. Aspen District Attorney Sherry Kalua sat down and spoke with Crime Watch Daily about this.
The odd thing was there was no way she could have seen that it was Nancy Pfister. When you went into the closet and you saw what was in there, it looked like a pile of laundry. Unless you pulled back the sheets and actually looked at what was there, you did not know that it was a person. She insisted that she saw this while insisting that she had not touched any of the sheets. She had not moved anything. She had not pulled it back.
When Catherine had called 911, she said, "There's a handprint on the headboard in reference to Nancy's bed, which was made up but without sheets." Investigators thought that Catherine had said, "There's blood on her forehead," and reached the conclusion that only the killer could have known this, since Nancy was wrapped up when she was found. Following the release of Nancy Christine and Catherine, Nancy's sister, Suzanne, announced that she would be seeking a restraining order against the two women. Then the following month, the files were unsealed and finally revealed a lot more information about the murder case. In October, Nancy's rental agreement with the Stylers had been cemented. Unbeknownst to Nancy, the couple were in severe financial difficulty. Their credit scores were so low that on the 18th of February, Alpine Bank rejected their loan application, seeking $25,000 to $50,000. William had told the loan officer that he desperately needed the money to pay rent at Nancy's home, but it was rejected. Upon discovering that it was rejected, William had told Alpine Bank's Aspen branch president that if something were to happen to Nancy, then it would be best for everybody involved. He also said that if he ended his own life, then Nancy Christine would be able to live off his $1 million insurance policy. That same day, William attempted to sell one of Nancy Christine's rings to a jeweler, but he didn't like the offer and threatened to end his own life. Catherine had told investigators that the relationship between Nancy and the Stylers had been strained for quite a while. Then when Nancy went to Australia, the Stylers stopped paying rent as well as utilities, and she discovered that they had been using her credit card and driving her car. On the 12th of December, Nancy had emailed William stating, "Nancy charged almost $670 to my card. No cash for the rest of our agreements. Expect to hear from my lawyer. You guys have a lot of nerve to move in with no payments, making me upset. I have other people to take care of, Gabe. Better get a moving truck and return to Denver." Then on the 17th of February, William emailed Nancy, "You keep repeating your allegation that Nancy never repaid you for the clothes bought with your card. This is false. You were repaid in excess between the money paid to the caterer on your behalf, the more than $1,000 spent buying your special champagne, which was never intended to be a gift to you. Be careful what you ask for. You may get more than you expect." Nancy then cut her vacation short and returned back to Aspen on the 21st of February. She informed the Stylers that they were being evicted and demanded that they pay her the $13,000 to $14,000 that they owed her before they could reclaim their possessions on their home. Catherine had told investigators that the Stylers were furious with Nancy, and Nancy Christine had even told her multiple times that she wanted to kill Nancy. Nancy Christine then contacted Catherine to tell her that she hadn't seen Nancy And over the next few days, her phone calls to Catherine increased in frequency. At one point, she said she and William had gone to Nancy's home to retrieve their items and noticed a foul smell. According to the affidavit, Catherine went to Nancy's home on the 26th of February. She went upstairs and found the walk-in closet locked. Typically, the key was in the door, but this time, it wasn't. Catherine had a spare key for the closet, and when she opened it, she found Nancy's lifeless body. It would also be revealed that in addition to the hammer and pill bottles with William's DNA over them, reddish-brown stains had been discovered inside the Styler's Jaguar car, on the driver's side, in both the front and the back of the car, and on cleaning supplies found in the trunk. Investigators working on the case believed that Catherine's versions of events had been inconsistent. She had first of all told an investigator that she saw the Stylers on the 26th of February at Nancy's home, before later saying that she hadn't seen them. Catherine's mother also told investigators that her daughter told her she saw Nancy's body wrapped in sheets, but had failed to mention this when she was questioned by investigators. Furthermore, within 24 hours of finding Nancy's body, Catherine took $6,000 in cash and jewellery from Nancy's safe deposit box at Alpine Bank. She had used the money to pay for her son to fly home and for part of his college tuition. After the charges were dropped, the district attorney's office announced that they wouldn't be seeking charges of theft against Catherine, despite the fact she quite clearly stole from Nancy after finding her body. Understandably, a lot of people were displeased with the outcome of the case. William was a very fragile man who used a wheelchair. Nancy had been murdered in her bed and then stuffed into trash bags, wrapped in a sheet and then moved into the walk-in closet. Pitkin County Sheriff's Office investigator Brad Gibson stated, "I know how difficult it can be to move a dead body with four grown men. While one person may be able to drag a body across a bedroom carpet, based on my experience with dead bodies, even dragging a dead body a very short distance is extremely difficult. With all those factors, I believe it unlikely for only one person to have been involved in moving, binding and packaging a body." Additionally, the release of the files revealed that somebody had flipped over Nancy's queen-size mattress to conceal the blood stains. In September, Nancy Christine spoke with ABC News 2020 to profess her innocence. She said that being in jail was a day at the beach in comparison to learning that her husband, who she had been with for 32 years, had committed such a gruesome act. She told her version of events, claiming that she and William never had a lease with Nancy, because Nancy didn't want one. She said that Nancy had told her that if she helped her pack for Australia, they could live in the home rent-free. She claimed that the grievance had come from the fact that Nancy had come home from her trip early and wanted them to move out immediately. Her claims were quite ludicrous, to say the very least. As mentioned, there were emails between William and Nancy which indicated that the Stylers owed Nancy money. On the 6th of August 2015, a year and a half after Nancy was murdered, William Styler ended his life by hanging at the Arrowhead Correctional Centre where he was serving his sentence. In a statement, Nancy Christine said, "William is now at peace after being tormented for such a long time. He was a successful, brilliant doctor, incredible and loving husband and father, and a gentle man. I hope people will remember him for the man he once was before his physical and mental illness took over his life." Following his suicide, Nancy Christine collected his $1 million life insurance policy, which had covered William for suicide. Just the month beforehand, she had filed for bankruptcy. Then in November, Nancy Christine had a book published, titled Guilt by Matrimony: A Memoir of Love, Madness and the Murder of Nancy Pfister. The book was not well received in Aspen, and in January following its publication, Juliana, Nancy's daughter, filed a wrongful death lawsuit, which alleged that William had fabricated his confession to protect his wife. The suit also accused Nancy Christine of profiting off Nancy's murder with her book deal and with William's life insurance policy. Then in June, Juliana reached a settlement deal and was given $850,000 of the $1 million life insurance policy.
You know, we all got to miss Nancy a lot during her life because she was someplace else as often as she was here. But now she's not coming back, and it's very, very difficult for people who were terribly fond of her.
The murder of Nancy thrust Aspen into a media frenzy, unlike anything the ski resort town had ever seen. It had all the hallmarks of a sensationalist whodunit. The victim was from a wealthy, prominent family that helped mould Aspen. The perpetrator was a scorned tenant, while another suspect stole money from the victim. Due to the court documents being sealed, rumours and speculation ran rife, and this didn't subside with the resolution of the case. The physical actions that William Styler described in his confession certainly appeared to be beyond his capabilities, leading many to believe that this case was never properly solved, and the degree of miscarriage of justice had taken place. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to say a big, massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Shivani, Kelly, and Gray. In return for your support on Patreon, you get exclusive Morbidology merch, exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, which aren't on the regular platforms, as well as bonus content from some episodes, and ad-free and early release episodes. You can join for as little as $1 a month, and you can cancel anytime. Also, if you sign up annually, you get 15% off. I'd also like to mention that I've joined the app Stereo, and I'm going to be doing live streams about true crime. Just click the link in my show notes, follow me, and you'll be able to join in on the live streams. It's totally free to download, and there's lots of other true crime streams up on there already. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week. Have you ever come across the concept of custom beauty? I know it sounds skeptical. It's like every time you scroll online, there's a new miracle product promising to fix your hair and skin woes. But let me tell you, PROS is the real deal when it comes to custom beauty. It's not just some marketing gimmick. Your personalised formula wouldn't even exist without your input. Each product on PROS is whipped up just for you, tailored to your specific needs, and they go deep into their consultations, delving into over 80 factors to really get a handle on your life and beauty goals. We're talking about everything from your hair and skin concerns to what you eat, how much you work out, and even how stressed you are. My friend Jen has been using PROS and raving about it non-stop. They even asked her about her zip code to suss out things like water hardness and UV index. When I hit the States later this year, PROS is going to be at the top of my shopping list. But until then, I'm living vicariously through Jen's luscious locks and glowing skin. Trust me, this stuff is the real deal. PROS is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at PROS.com/morbidology. That is PROSE. .com/morbidology for your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formula. PROS.com/morbidology.